Chapter 2. Content warning. There's some misgendering of a trans character in this chapter, as per the show. When they arrive back in the capital, there's another letter from Wangshi. It takes Dong Er 2 days to decode it, and when she does, she approaches Tang Fan at his desk in the Xunjin prefecture with a look of mild confusion instead of her usual excitement. She places her transcription in front of Tang Fan carefully. Tang Daga, this one is different. Some of these characters were smudged when he wrote them. Smudged? Wangshi's calligraphy is impeccable. Tang Fan has no doubt that if he were to have somehow smudged a single brush stroke, he would have thrown out the paper to start again. Dong Er points out 10 characters scattered throughout the letter. Others wouldn't have even noticed, but I know his calligraphy well. Tang Fan pulls over a blank piece of paper, dips his brush in ink, and carefully writes out the characters in the order they appear. Autumn winds, traveler's clothes, a setting sun, a road too long, he recites thoughtfully. Autumn winds. He abruptly sits up straight. Dong Er, have you read the works of Meng Jiao yet? She shakes her head, and Tang Fan stands, starts pacing. These are some of the last lines of one of his poems. The next two final lines are, "You ask me where I am going, when I can hardly preserve myself." Dong Er stares at him with wide eyes. Is Wang Daga in danger? He is, or he's going to be. Tang Fan steps around the desk, heading for the door. I'm going to find Sui Zhou. Ah, I'm coming with you, Dong Er cries, hurrying out the door after him. Tang Fan stops her with a hand to her shoulder. Not this time, Dong Er, he says gently. We may need to speak with the Emperor. He doesn't remember the walk to the Northern Imperial Guard, his mind working swiftly. When he arrives, he walks in without being halted. It's been years since they stopped him from entering at the gates, and none of the guards give him a second glance as he walks through the compound and into the commander's office. He finds Sui Zhou standing in front of the commander's desk, giving orders to the two Xiaqi facing him. Sui Zhou meets Tang Fan's eyes over their shoulders, but before he can say anything, Tang Fan declares, "Dong Er finished decoding the letter." Sui Zhou purses his mouth, shifting his feet into a wider stance. He looks back to his men. You can go, he instructs briefly, and they bow to him before leaving. Sui Zhou examines Tang Fan, brow furrowed. Then he walks past him to the door. Let's go.
Guang Chuan, you won't even ask what it says?
Tang Fan runs after him to keep up with his long strides. There are more suitable places than the Imperial Guard to discuss such things. Tang Fan scoffs.
Then the Imperial Guard, currently being overseen by Sui Baihu?
Sui Zhou turns to him without slowing his pace, expression troubled. Yes. Tang Fan breathlessly matches his pace as they tread the familiar route to Dong's restaurant, foot traffic parting around them at the flying fish uniform. Sitting at their usual table, Dong Gu merely greets them with a nod from behind the counter and heads back toward the kitchen to fetch their noodles. Sui Zhou glances around them before leaning toward Tang Fan earnestly. What did he say?
That his life is in danger, in as many words.
Did he send for us?
Tang Fan shakes his head. He leans back as Dong Gu places bowls in front of them, with equally sized servings. Tang Fan is distractedly pleased to note.
Eat quickly, before it gets cold, Dong Gu says cheerfully,
before bustling back inside. Tongfan pulls his chopsticks out of their case and quickly scoops up a mouthful of noodles. We need to talk to the Emperor. Sui Zhou retrieves a pair of chopsticks from the cup on the table, adjusting them in his grip.
The Emperor?
With Wangxia's life in danger, he will be sure to act.
You said yourself Wangxia is the Emperor's last remaining destabilizing factor. That's why he's so far away. His Majesty already promoted a eunuch in the closest thing to a military role possible, without causing a revolt amongst the courtiers. There are countless reasons he can't single out Wangxia for support if he's under personal attack.
Tongfan slumps. He swallows his mouthful of noodles and pauses to think before speaking. That's why he's sending coded messages to us instead of directly to the palace. Sui Zhou nods briefly, his tight expression softening a little. We need a faster way of communicating with him if he needs us. We need to know what we're facing so we can be as well-equipped as we can, Tongfan says. Sui Zhou tightens his grip on the chopsticks and stares into the bowl for a long few moments.
Leave it to me,
he says with finality, at last lifting some noodles to his mouth.
Guangchuan, are you not even going to tell me?
Sui Zhou doesn't answer that, focused on his meal.
Guangchuan!
Tongfan slurps another mouthful of noodles himself, chewing while he tries to catch Sui Zhou's eye.
Guangchuan Xiang?
Deng Er has already started making wontons, Tongfan kept blessedly occupied by wrapping them, when Sui Zhou arrives home that evening. They hear the gate creak and his footsteps cross the courtyard when he appears at the door that opens onto the storeroom adjacent to the kitchen. He's carrying something bulky and shrouded in dark cloth, shaped like a large box, and it makes odd noises when he sets it carefully on the ground.
Sui Daga!
Deng Er rushes over curiously.
What is it?
He lifts the cloth aside, and Tongfan is surprised to see a cage with a flutter of white and brown feathers within. Messenger pigeons.
For sending messages to He Tao,
he exclaims.
How did you get them?
Sui Zhou takes a deep breath.
The Emperor has occasion to consult me on certain matters, as a veteran, while the position of the Minister of War is still vacant.
He gives Tongfan a look loaded with meaning.
There's a cage of pigeons homed to the North Imperial Guard, traveling to He Tao as we speak.
Tongfan feels a flush of relief, even as he's mildly irritated that Sui Zhou carried out this plan without him. He understands why. For all that the Emperor's gratitude to them for foiling his assassination and coup seems boundless, Sui Zhou is reluctant to take any kind of advantage of it. Tongfan seems to be the only one who sees it for what it is. The Emperor's new perspective of mortality and the importance of Ming's citizens as people in their own right. Nonetheless, Sui Zhou seems intent on keeping Tongfan's meetings with the Emperor as infrequent as possible.
These pigeons will fly to Wang Daga?
Deng Er asks, clearly impressed. Sui Zhou nods.
What are we going to send him?
Sui Zhou carefully lowers the cloth to cover the cage and ushers Deng Er back to the kitchen.
Later, he says. Eat first.
As if he can't resist, he rolls up his uniform sleeves and starts wrapping wontons. After dinner and much discussion, they fix a message to the leg of a pigeon to be released in the morning. It says simply, message received. Reply soon. Sui Zhou comes home with the tiny curled slip of a response in his hand 4 weeks later.
We are lonely here,
it says. Tongfan reads it over and over, sitting in the kitchen as Sui Zhou works.
Who's going to intercept a pigeon?
he asks in frustration. Sui Jo huffs in amusement.
A hawk?
Hawks can't read. Tang Fan grumbles and mentally maps another cipher onto the characters.
Maybe it isn't encoded,
Sui Jo suggests. Tang Fan looks up at him.
Who does Wangxia have that is loyal to him in Heitao? Before Jia Kui, he couldn't even trust the Western Depot guards.
He only had Ding Rong, Tang Fan says, swallowing. Sui Jo meets his eyes, looking just as troubled.
He relied on his networks in the capital to keep him appraised of potential risk.
He's alone there, vulnerable, in the midst of a military installment who would sacrifice themselves before accepting a unit commander. Even though the emperor promoted him to governor instead of general, there are few who wouldn't see the role of influence for what it is.
Sui Jo goes back to slicing noodle dough. He needs another Jia Kui. He has only a personal bodyguard. No agents on the ground for detecting conspiracies as they emerge.
We should go to him, Tang Fan declares. Sui Jo shakes his head, still chopping.
It's not a long-term solution.
Who else has the skill and loyalty to protect him? Sui Jo tips the noodles into the wok, stirring them through the boiling water before sliding the lid on. Tang Fan picks up the long cooking chopsticks and uses them to pluck a scrap of pork from the chopping board and pop it into his mouth, watching as Sui Jo starts to peel a knuckle of ginger for mincing.
Sui Jo!
Tang Fan blurts abruptly, sitting up straight and swallowing his mouthful.
I think there is someone.
The next day, they leave for the Northern Imperial Guard together first thing, picking up scallion pancakes for breakfast on the way and leaving Dong Ar still asleep. Tang Fan has to lift the hems of his robes to keep them from the churned mud of the streets, snow crushed down underfoot. It's been days since a fresh layer has fallen. They don't need to talk. They discussed and plotted and planned late into the night. Tang Fan feels seedy from it, but Sui Jo looks just as well put together in his flying fish uniform as ever. Sui Jo nods at the guards as they enter the Northern Imperial Guard. None of them so much as give Tang Fan a second glance. They bypass the administrative chambers and head directly down to the holding cells. Most are empty, while a few hold sleeping prisoners. The one they're heading for is separate from the others, tucked away in a corner. Its occupant is awake and sitting at the table in the center of the cell, bed neatly made. She looks surprised to see them, though.
Tang Fan, she says. You?
Tang Fan holds up the bag of pancakes. Breakfast? Sui Jo insists on keeping the cell door open, though he stands in it with his feet planted wide and arms crossed, watching blank-faced as Tang Fan arranges his robes and sits down opposite Qingge. She doesn't seem much of a threat, even less than she ever did when she was holding court at Huanyi Brothel. Her robes are plain and rough-woven, her hair lackluster, collected in a single braid down her back. Her face is more gaunt than it was the last time he saw her, and seems washed out without its usual paint. He takes a pancake from the bag for himself and offers the rest to her. She takes the bag hesitantly.
Why are you here?
The role reversal isn't lost on Tang Fan, even with the fresh realization that she was Li Zilong's right hand. Her visits to him while he'd languished in Li Zilong's cell had brought him comfort. He'd always felt safe with her, despite Sui Jo's misgivings. Then again, she and Sui Jo had crossed swords more than once, so perhaps it isn't surprising he feels differently. We have a proposition for you, Tang Fan starts. A blunt beginning feels appropriate. There are no niceties they can exchange here. She is only alive because she saved the Emperor's life, and only in the Northern Imperial Guard cells because it was safer for her under Sui Jo's purview than the capital's prison. Tongfan had claimed that as one of the few rewards he'd asked for once it was all over. Jinga raises her eyebrows.
You speak as if I am in any kind of position to bargain with you.
Tongfan retrieves the paper bag, takes out a pancake, and places it in her hand. We will not discuss it until you've eaten. He twists on his seat and holds out the bag to Sui Zhou. Guangchuan? Sui Zhou gives him a dark look, and Tongfan shrugs, taking another pancake for himself. We have a proposition for you, Jinga Gunyang, he says again. You have proven yourself loyal, with capacity for great moral judgment, and of course, highly skilled. We would like to offer you an opportunity to utilize these skills again, outside of the capital.
Jinga lowers her hands, pancake half eaten. And what are you asking in return?
Tongfan watches her, trying to convey his sincerity with his expression and an even tone. Your loyalty, morality, and skills.
Jinga huffs in surprise and shakes her head, disbelieving. Loyalty to who? The Emperor?
To Ming, Tongfan confirms. As your father was, by protecting another man Wan An strove to destroy.
Jinga's brows draw tight. Wang Zhe.
He is governing a border town, Heitao, one of Ming's most crucial military strongholds.
He hardly needs my help, then.
On the contrary, he is an imperial eunuch. Few hate his kind more than military men, and he has left his network of allies behind in the capital. His enemies seek to take him down at every turn. Tongfan sees Sui Zhou shift an infinitesimal amount from the corner of his eye. This is something they had argued back and forth about. Wang Xia would die before exposing weakness to another, let alone an enemy. But Tongfan knew that the only way he would gain Qingge's loyalty to his cause would be to encourage her empathy. The reality was, she needed not just a motive to choose freedom over prison, but a cause she would be loyal to. A man loyal to the Emperor, alone on the border, far from family, and only wishing to stay loyal to his cause? Having Tongfan himself implore her with the story only increases its potency.
And I would be pardoned in order to be released.
Tongfan does glance at Sui Zhou this time, not because they hadn't discussed this question, but because he was dreading it regardless.
Sui Zhou meets his gaze, jaw set,
and Tongfan tries to draw strength from it. You would be requisitioned by the Heitao Prefecture.
I see.
She lowers her gaze. It's not what Tongfan wanted to offer her. She had been chattel since her father was banished, and his fingers curl into fists with the urge to tear up her contract, the same way he'd done Dong Ar's. His confidence that Jia Kui is well-treated and respected with considerable freedoms is one of the few reasons he's sitting across from her at all. He knew Jia Kui's crimes had been such that Sui Zhou had hunted him across China for them, and yet he walked freely at Wangsha's side.
And if I say no, you would remain here,
Sui Zhou says, speaking up for the first time since they entered the cell.
Indefinitely.
Jinga takes a bite of her pancake, chewing thoughtfully.
When do we leave?
Phase one of the plan complete, Tongfan returns home to write 50,000 taels on a narrow strip of paper. When the ink is dry, he rolls it up carefully and tucks it in the cylinder attached to one of the pigeons. Dong Ar emerges from her room to watch as he releases it to the sky, both of them staring at it as it wheels around and disappears over the rooftops. Are we going to visit Wang Daga soon? She asks. I hope so, Dong Ar. Next, he gets changed out of his uniform, slinging the heavy cloak around his shoulders before heading to the outer reaches of the city, purchasing an expensive jar of wine on the way. The men groan when they see him enter the shop front. Not exactly the welcome he'd hoped for, but he perseveres regardless. "Where's your boss? I need to speak with her."
"On a job?" one of them says. "Not everyone gets a government salary for wandering around hassling poor working people every day," he mutters on the end of it.
Tongfan chooses to ignore that. "I will wait, then," he says, pivoting back out with a sweep of his cloak. There's a food stall across the road selling bao hot enough that the steam is rising in great clouds from the cart, and a small table set under a nearby awning. A few hours and many bao later, Jin San saunters around the corner. Tongfan doesn't even have a chance to call out to her. She's looking directly at him already, her usual faint smirk firmly in place.
"Tongfan,"
she says, dropping down onto the seat opposite him, slouching with her knees spread wide.
"Should I be worried? An encounter with you usually means a mortal injury isn't far behind."
"Ah, Jin San Yi, can I not simply want to visit my friend?"
He retrieves the wine jar and sets it on the table between them. Jin San snorts faintly, looking at the jar and back to Tongfan.
"As long as your doctor friend is standing by," she says, grabbing the wine jar as she stands. "Come on then, Tongdaren," she says, and strolls back towards the open door of her shop front across the road.
She leads them through the front room, greeting her men as she passes, to a semi-covered courtyard through a back door. A steadily burning brazier sits in the middle of the small space, flagstones dark and wet beneath it from melted snow, and there are stools set around it. Jin San closes the door behind them before taking a seat in her usual relaxed pose.
"Do you not feel the cold?"
Tongfan gripes, crowding close to the brazier and holding out his hands to it instead of sitting down. Jin San shrugs.
"No use warming up if I'm just going to have to go out again. Not all of us are soft scholars."
She unstoppers the wine jar and takes a swig directly from the mouth of it, before holding it out to Tongfan. He accepts and follows her lead before handing it back.
"So, is it information you want, or do you have a job for me?"
Tongfan smiles ruefully and sits down. He should have known she would cut to the chase.
"A job."
"Paid?"
"Of course,"
he scoffs insulted. She takes another swig of the jar.
"I haven't forgotten the favors I owe you, Tongdaren, even if you have."
He waves his hand.
"We're friends. There are no favors between us."
She gives him a skeptical look. "Tell me about the job. I assume it's something either big or dangerous, which is why you're softening me up."
"It is both big and dangerous," Tongfan admits.
"It's likely within the next 2 weeks that we'll be traveling with a small party to Heitao. We need a skilled and trustworthy carter."
Jin San widens her eyes, staring at him. "Heitao? On the Oirat border?"
Tongfan nods.
"Are you being banished?"
Tongfan shakes his head, amused.
"Not this time. It's for a case in the Northern Imperial Guard's purview."
She hands back the wine jar.
"Seems an odd assignment for the Shuqian prefectural governor," she comments. "Are you sure it's not illegal? We don't do illegal jobs anymore."
Tongfan smiles. "It is imperial business. Not illegal, but definitely of the highest secrecy. There are those who may wish to thwart our journey."
"I hope you're bringing guards, then. I'm not interested in taking another hit for you," she sniffs.
Tongfan steps away from the brazier and gives her a formal bow.
"Rest assured, Jin San Yi, the greatest kung fu master in the capital will be accompanying us."
She raises an eyebrow. "I wouldn't expect Sui Daren to let you go off on your own."
She snatches the wine jar back from his outstretched hands, swirls it in her grip.
Very well. I'll take the job on one condition.
She holds his gaze, challenging.
You must address me as Jinsan Ye.
Tong Fan straightens in surprise. Jinsan, there is no need to hide amongst friends.
She snorts and puts the stopper back on the wine jar before standing.
Exactly. I was raised a man. I live as a man. There is nothing for Jinsan Ye to hide.
Tong Fan blinks, mentally adjusting.
As Jinsan Ye wishes,
he says, dipping into a smaller but no less respectful bow.
Good. Then we won't have any problems.
Tong Fan swiftly corrects himself, swaggers past him and back inside.
Come back tomorrow for an estimate of costs, he calls over his shoulder.
Tong Fan smiles, filled with the exhilaration of a plan coming together, and begins a brisk walk to the iron market.
Wuyin is sanding down a saddle seat with slow, meditative strokes when Tong Fan arrives. He glances up as Tong Fan walks across the courtyard, then looks back down at his work.
Tong Daren.
Tong Fan comes to stand next to him at the workbench. When Wuyin finally finishes sanding and sets his tools down, Tong Fan hands him a paper bag.
It's your favorite pork bao, Tong Fan informs him.
Wuyin nods in acknowledgement, extracting a bao and eating half of it in one bite.
What do you want, Tong Daren?
Tong Fan pouts.
Why is it that no one is willing to accept a gesture of friendship anymore without assuming ulterior motives?
He asks petulantly.
Wuyin just stares, eating the rest of the bun.
Tong Fan wilts.
We need a carriage.
In the city, in the country, mountain roads, plains.
Tong Fan takes the bag back and reaches for a bao of his own.
To journey to Heitao.
He takes a bite.
Wuyin hums, then steps away.
Tong Fan watches his back as he picks through the tools on the workbench behind him. He returns with a rag in his hand and starts rubbing oil over the wood.
When do we need to leave?
You do not need to return to Oirat with us if it's not something you desire, Tong Fan says carefully.
Wuyin shrugs. Aha would go. Besides, I doubt you would survive the journey without me.
Very funny, Tong Fan retorts. I'll have you know I have assembled an expert team.
That's why you're here.
Tong Fan gives Wuyin's massive arm a shove, grinning.
I've hired the best carter in the city. He can take care of himself, too. I'll send him to meet with you tomorrow. You should bring him for dinner afterwards, so we can all discuss the plan.
Wuyin nods. Tong Fan hesitates a moment, leaning towards the house.
Can I?
Wuyin nods again, gesturing Tong Fan towards it. And Tong Fan dips his head in thanks and heads inside. The small shrine to Dwarla and Alassi is still well taken care of, though Tong Fan has not visited it enough of late. He kneels on the pad on the floor in front of it and lowers his head respectfully.
Wuyin is right. Dwarla would never let him set out on a mission like this without her.
Tong Fan misses her with an ache worse than the sharpest hunger. And it's moments like this, looking at small artifacts of her and Alassi's lives, cared for by Wuyin so tenderly, that he feels the most poignant guilt for her death. He presses his forehead to the floor briefly, tells her he will take the best care he can of Wuyin on their upcoming journey, and finishes with an apology, as always.
How'd it go?
Sui Chou asks when Tong Fan finally gets home. He's already out of his uniform, sleeves tied up and apron skirting his waist, watching Deng Ar cut thin slices of meat. Tong Fan sits on the stool next to the bench, automatically reaching for the cooking chopsticks.
Without a flaw, he reports.
We're going to visit Wang Daga?
Dengar asks eagerly, looking up.
If Wang Daga agrees with our plan, Tongfan says, just as Sui Zhou says,
we're going, you are not.
Both Tongfan and Dengar look at Sui Zhou.
Dengar's eyes wide and betrayed.
Sui Daga, you can't go without me.
Sui Zhou shakes his head, pressing his lips together.
It's too dangerous.
I was the one walking the streets here when the rebels were in power. You were both in hiding. Can it be more dangerous than that?
Yes,
Sui Zhou says shortly, beginning to mince a handful of garlic cloves.
Guangchuan, she could...
Tongfan starts, but is cut off with a glare.
Dengar will stay with Pei Huai and Tong Yu.
Dengar throws down the enormous knife she's been holding with an alarming clatter and aggressively crosses her arms over her chest.
I won't! I'll run away again! You can't stop me! I'll follow you!
Sui Zhou...
Enough!
Sui Zhou barks. Out of the kitchen, both of you! Dengar spins on her heel and stomps out, and Tongfan watches her go, eyes wide. He fiddles with the chopsticks in his hands.
Guangchuan,
he starts hesitantly. Sui Zhou slams the corner of the knife into the chopping board, where it vibrates ominously.
Do you want turnip brick for dinner, Tongfan?
Tongfan lurches to his feet.
I'll see you at dinner!
And he runs out of the kitchen and into the courtyard after Dengar. Dengar has shut herself in her room, so Tongfan heads to his own. A day of walking to all corners of the capital has left him more grimy than he'd like, and he probably has time for a bath before the food is ready. The water is hot. Sui Zhou had probably already bathed when he arrived home. There's another pail of just boiled water set on the bench, and Tongfan tips it into the tub before undressing and climbing in. It's blissfully hot. He could cry at how good it feels after a day walking around in the cold, and he scrubs his body without letting any limbs out of the water before sinking down with a sigh, closing his eyes with just his face above the surface of the water, a compromise to his need for air. He's disturbed a while later by a dull thud that drums through the water. Opening his eyes, he sees Sui Zhou frowning over the tub, having apparently just kicked it to get Tongfan's attention. Tongfan blinks and lifts his head just enough for his ears to clear the water.
Dinner's ready,
Sui Zhou says shortly, turning away immediately.
Guangchuan, wait!
Tongfan calls. Sui Zhou freezes. His hand hovers in the air for a moment, where it was about to part the curtain. When it falls to his side and his head drops, he turns around. His expression is weary, like he knows Tongfan has already won the argument.
You know Dengar's skills. She'll be immensely useful if we need to investigate the situation in Heitao.
Sui Zhou lowers his head in what could be interpreted as a nod. And you will be there, and Wu Yin, and Qinga, even Jin San can fight. Dengar will be safe with us. Sui Zhou stares at the edge of the bath with a resigned expression. And it isn't an empty threat. You know she will run after us. And Dengar alone on the road would be...
All right.
Sui Zhou cuts him off, grimacing as he rubs the back of his neck.
That is the only reason.
Tongfan hides a victorious smile below the surface of the water. As if he can sense it anyway, Sui Zhou's gaze shifts from the edge of the tub to meet Tongfan's. Sui Zhou doesn't look away, and Tongfan feels locked in his gaze for endless seconds. Steam rises dreamy and slow between them, the heat of the water throbbing in Tongfan's scalp. The urge to break the moment with teasing is unbearable. Tongfan raises his arms high enough to sketch a bow, drips tinkling against the surface of the water.
Thank you, Daga,
he says, lilting with exaggeration. He expects Sui Zhou to roll his eyes and stomp out of the room,
Or perhaps even shove Tongfan's head under the water in retaliation. It wouldn't be the first time. But instead of closed and irritated, the look on Suizhou's face is something soft, open. It makes Tongfan's breath catch and his toes curl, even as Suizhou's gaze seems to be yanked away again, as he once more turns towards the door. Guangchuan, wait! Tongfan calls out, despite the fact something soft inside him is quivering like silken tofu. Because there's an instinct he can never resist that urges him to just push harder. To poke and prod, to see how far Suizhou will let him go. Will you help me wash my hair? Is what comes out of his mouth. The same rounded, sulky tone he uses when he's begging for Suizhou's cooking, which he knows from experience Suizhou never says no to. Suizhou's eyes are wide as he stares at him. Tongfan is torn between the wish for him to roll his eyes and leave after all, and the desire for Suizhou to engage, to push back. After one breathless moment, Suizhou sighs and perches on the step next to the tub, sitting sideways and twisting his torso to rest his arms on the edge. Here, he gestures, rolling up the sleeves of his undershirt. Tongfan's heart lurches into a stumbling run, painful in his weak scholar's chest. He stares at Suizhou's calloused hands, dipping into the water, building up a lather of soap, his wrists corded with tendons, veins elegantly sculpted on the insides of his bare arms. Something has gone terribly wrong. By Suizhou giving into Tongfan's teasing, the tables have turned.
Dinner is getting cold,
Suizhou prompts, and Tongfan pushes himself across the tub and sits within arm's reach, facing away. It helps a little bit to not have to look at him.
Closer,
Suizhou says, hands cupping Tongfan's shoulders and tugging him back. And that does not help at all. Tongfan holds his breath as Suizhou gathers up the wet hair sticking to the back of Tongfan's neck, his fingers brushing Tongfan's nape. Even under the water, Tongfan feels the skin across his body prickle alight, hair on his arms standing up. He shivers, crossing his arms over his chest.
Is the water cold?
Suizhou murmurs, the breath of the words stroking cold against the top of Tongfan's wet shoulder. He jerks down abruptly, immersing himself up to his neck, and Suizhou's hold on his hair yanks painfully.
Ow!
Tongfan complains.
Be careful.
There is more amusement than censure in Suizhou's tone, and Tongfan doesn't have time to be offended by it, because Suizhou is working his fingers through the long strands of Tongfan's hair, making his way upward until his fingers are rubbing against Tongfan's scalp. The sensation tingles hotly all the way down his spine, all the focus of his body rushing to the site of contact, and the warring urges to get both as far away from and as close to Suizhou as possible become overwhelming. Tongfan must make some kind of noise, because Suizhou stops, which makes him make another noise.
Is it all right?
Suizhou asks, genuine concern in his tone. Tongfan can't take it. He sinks into the water until he's fully submerged. Reaching his hands up to grip his hair, he gives it a sharp tug of admonishment before surfacing with a gasp and combing his fingers through it to rinse the soap out. You are taking too long, Guangchuan. I'm too hungry for this, he says, breathless from holding it underwater. He's not turning around, and definitely, definitely not standing up out of the opaque water. Suizhou huffs, and out of the corner of his eye, Tongfan sees him standing, drying off his hands on his apron.
Fetch Dong Ar on your way to dinner,
Suizhou says.
I'll warm it up when you're ready.
He heads out of the bath chamber, and Tongfan stays still in the water until the sound of it lapping against the sides of the tub falls silent. His body is not as calm. The only time he is ever this hard is when he's doing personal research for his novels. To have someone else involved, even marginally, is highly irregular. Even during his years at the Academy. Look, being observant is his nature. The other students may have been older than him, but they all lived in close quarters. He knew what they got up to. All sorts of agreements they had. But none of those agreements involved hair washing, as far as he knew. Dinner is getting cold. Even more excruciating, Sui Jo is waiting for him, waiting on Tong Fan's deeply confused body to get itself under control so everyone can eat. As if in agreement, and mutual declaration against Tong Fan's more mutinous body parts, his stomach gives a loud growl of hunger. It will not do. The cold will see to it. Tong Fan braces himself and lurches out of the water, hunched over. He towels himself off without looking and hurriedly wraps his underclothes around himself before gritting his teeth and launching himself back into the courtyard. The cold does the trick. He yelps as he hops across the icy stones barefoot, back to his room and to warmth and, hopefully, to a return of his dignity. Tong Fan has spent most of the morning dragging through a pile of reports, taking advantage of his feelings of guilt towards Pan Bin for his impending departure. He hasn't told Pan Bin yet, and so his Shuqiang is simply staring at him with deep suspicion from the desk on the opposite side of the office, having failed to extract the truth from Tong Fan through interrogation. Still, Tong Fan is relieved when Sui Jo strides in around lunchtime. "Sui Jo! Ah!" Tong Fan cries. "You are right. We should discuss this case over lunch." Tong Fan has made it up and around his desk before he's finished speaking, and grabs Sui Jo's arm, hauling him out the door before Pan Bin can invite himself along. "I'll be back later, Shuqiang," he throws over his shoulder. Sui Jo's steps are syncopated for a moment, stumbling as Tong Fan pulls him along. By the time they exit the prefecture, he's fallen into the rhythm of Tong Fan's gait, and Tong Fan lets go of him.
"I have a response,"
Sui Jo murmurs, slipping something into Tong Fan's hand without looking. They walk in silence for another several paces before Tong Fan unrolls the small scroll of paper, subtly, and glances down. "I accept," says Wang Zhe's neat calligraphy. Tong Fan's heart picks up its pace, and he nearly skips a step. "How soon can we leave?" Tong Fan asks. They arrive at Dong's restaurant and take a seat inside. Sui Jo is working something through his head. Tong Fan can tell from the way his brow furrows just faintly. "Sui Jo?" Tong Fan prompts, when an answer is not forthcoming. Something occurs to him, and he's mildly irritated at himself that it hadn't crossed his mind before. "Can you leave?" Sui Jo looks at him, pained.
"I will," he says firmly.
"Sui Jo, you can't just abandon your post after making it to acting commander."
"It's not what's important right now."
Sui Jo has a determined set to his jaw. They have had a conversation like this before, and there are echoes of it in Tong Fan's memory. Though Sui Jo had been in Xiaoqi brown then, not the elegant lines of the flying fish uniform, the meaning of it then had slipped through Tong Fan's fingers. He tries to grasp it again now. "You think Wang Xia being under threat in Heitao has bigger implications for Ming?" Their noodles arrive, and Tong Fan digs in, though he keeps his eyes on Sui Jo. Sui Jo watches him eat for a moment, then huffs quietly, tension loosening in his expression, and picks up his own chopsticks.
"You don't need to worry about the Northern Imperial Guard. We can leave in 10 days.
Tong Fan wants to say more, but holds his tongue. He finishes his meal before Sui Jo does, and without speaking, Sui Jo moves 2 more pieces of pork belly from his own bowl to Tong Fan's. Tong Fan grins, savoring as he eats them. "Wu Yin and Jin San will join us tonight," Tangfan says. We can discuss the finer details. Suizhou nods. Who will take care of the house? Suizhou sets his chopsticks on his empty bowl. Shui Ling can look in on it. We can leave anything of value this time with Pei Huai and Tong Yu. Tangfan knows Suizhou's mood changes when he's reminded of the last time the house was burgled while they were away, so he changes the subject. With any luck, Jinsan and Wu Yin will have already been in discussions to arrange a suitable carriage. We can take whatever we need with us. The corner of Suizhou's mouth raises in a smile.
It will be hard to move discreetly if we are traveling in a caravan.
Tangfan smiles in return, playing along. I don't see how else we will bring enough food to sustain Dongar's gluttony.
Suizhou huffs an amused breath. Turnip brakes don't take up all that much room, he says lightly.
Tangfan makes a noise of outrage. Guangchuangxian, you wouldn't! The look Suizhou gives him is indulgent, warm. Tangfan ducks his head, both pleased and somehow embarrassed. He cleans his chopsticks off with the cloth he carries for such a purpose and tucks them away in their bamboo case. With a full belly, he has the wherewithal to examine the rest of his emotional state. For all that Wang Shi might be in mortal danger, he's excited at the prospect of leaving the capital again, of traveling in close quarters with some of his favorite people, of investigating a case somewhere he's never been. And he doesn't think he's wrong in reading the same anticipation in Suizhou. In fact, there may even be something about being in mortal danger that contributes to that rush of excitement in his veins. Surely Suizhou must feel the same. He would never have joined the military if it wasn't the case. Tangfan finds he's been staring, eyes following the strong lines of Suizhou's shoulders down to where Suizhou's hands lie folded loosely on the table, not far from where the hilt of his sword rests against the edge. He's lost in thought when Suizhou interrupts by clearing his throat.
I have to return to the guard. There is much to do.
Yes, yes, Tangfan agrees. Pandaren cannot be expected to work on all the Shunqian Prefecture's cases by himself, either. Suizhou leaves a handful of coins on the table for Donggu, and then they step outside again. There's a strangely awkward moment when they part. They both hesitate for a beat, then nod at each other once, before turning and walking in opposite directions.
What makes you think there won't be trouble?
Jinsan asks skeptically when Tangfan has finished laying out the plan, gesturing over their empty dishes.
It seems to follow you two everywhere. Why is this top-secret mission any different?
Wu Yin nods in agreement, mouth twisted in a wry smile. Suizhou simply looks to Tangfan as if expecting him to answer. Dongar is still eating, eyes darting between them. Our communication so far has been encoded at best, vague at worst. There are many reasons for government officials to leave the capital and journey to a Ming outpost. Only the emperor himself knows where we're going. He looks to Suizhou to confirm. Suizhou lowers his head in a nod.
Ah, but you have cargo,
Jinsan points out, resting his elbow on the table and pointing at Tangfan.
And cargo is always desirable to someone. The more we know about it, the more we can predict where the trouble might come from.
Tangfan hesitates. They debated how much to tell Jinsan, and just when to tell him the details. They couldn't hide. The less he knew, the better, and the better for him agreeing to work with them. The cargo can take care of itself, Tangfan prevaricates. Jinsan gives him a deeply unimpressed look, and Tangfan sighs. Suizhou speaks up.
You've met the cargo before, he says in his usual even tone. It's Qingge.
Qingge? Jinsan erupts from the table. That traitor left me for dead. She should have been executed. Why should she get sent to banishment with this kind of escort? He gestures broadly at them.
Tongfun winces. Information of the details of Chingo's redemptive behavior had been kept from even the highest level courtiers. But of course, the news of the jewel in Huan Yi brothel's crown turning out to be the Kung Fu master at the center of the imperial coup had been more difficult to suppress. Tongfun is fairly certain Tree Mama has, in fact, been banking on the scandal.
Things are not always what they seem from the outside.
Sui Zhou meets Jin San's gaze calmly.
Black and white are not so clearly defined when you look more closely.
Jin San slowly sits down again. He must be remembering, as Tongfun is, the surprising lenience Sui Zhou had shown him after his theft of the Imperial Ice was discovered. He scowls, nonetheless.
I should double my fee.
If you think it necessary,
Sui Zhou replies easily. And Jin San looks away, mollified.
Who would want to steal Chingu Gunyang?
Deng Er pipes up curiously, drawing everyone's eyes.
She shrugs.
Jin San Ye said that cargo is always desirable. Who desires Chingu?
Tongfun and Sui Zhou look at each other.
There hasn't been any trouble since she's been imprisoned,
Sui Zhou starts.
But even though the coup was shut down and Li Zilong was killed, he was involved in far more schemes than that one,
Tongfun says. Chingu was his right hand. Who knows what kind of knowledge she has?
I do,
Sui Zhou says bluntly.
She was interrogated when she was arrested. We learned about several more schemes that the guard and both Eastern and Western depots have been pursuing since.
Ah, but Guangchuan, does everyone know that? Maybe you're keeping her alive because she won't tell you everything. Maybe she's still loyal to her old shifu.
In which case, she is very valuable cargo.
Sui Zhou agrees somberly. Over the next 10 days, they move their supplies and provisions in small loads to Wu Yun's compound in the Iron Market. No more than a satchel each day. From the outside, no one would know that they are preparing for a long journey. As an added precaution, Tongfun has constructed a story about visiting Tongzhou for a week to deal with trouble his former in-laws are stirring up, counting on Ban Pin spreading the gossip around as he sees fit. Tong Yu fusses and frets, but she wouldn't be his sister if she didn't. Tongfun joins her and Pei Huai for a meal one night, while Sui Zhou is finalizing the logistics and the guard for transporting one of their prisoners in total secrecy.
Jia Jia,
Tongfun soothes, taking Tong Yu's hands in his as they sit next to each other at the table.
Guangchuan will be with Dong Er and I, and Wu Yin will be there too. And others who know how to fight. We will be perfectly safe.
Tong Yu squeezes his hands, her smile painful.
You must take care of Guangchuan as well,
she says, leaning forward to look hard into his eyes.
Be careful with him.
Tongfun laughs, unsure what to say. Across the table, Pei Huai sighs.
And I hope you have learnt enough from watching me over the years to know how to use this.
He gestures to a chest sitting by the door.
There should be enough supplies in there to do anything you can without a doctor available. Should anyone get hurt?
Tongfun pouts.
I will have to tell Dong Er we have to take less cake if we are to fit that in our luggage, he says.
Pei Huai kicks at his ankle.
Oh, Lao Pei,
you can ride a horse instead of in the carriage, he says. Make it fit.
Wu Yin is preparing enough horses for all of them, and in the lead up to their departure, he's been gradually moving them to a stable outside the capital. From what Tongfun understands, Jin San is leaving his crew to his second in charge, along with enough funds from his advance payment to see them through any potentially difficult times.
The day they are due to leave dawns clear and cold, and Sui Zhou makes the three of them breakfast with the last scraps of food left in their kitchen. Sesame cakes and hot tea, eaten silently around the table in a mostly empty room.
"Let's go through the plan again," Sui Zhou insists as they finish eating.
Tang Fan hums in agreement. Deng Er will meet Wu Yin on the eastern side of the Iron Market, and together they will take the carriage out of the capital via the Dongzhi Gate. Sui Daga will take a decoy carriage to the Northern Imperial Guard in the afternoon, Deng Er continues. When the guard changes in the holding cells after dinner time, he will take Qingge to the secret passageway that exits at the rear of the compound. Then he will leave via the stables and take the decoy carriage west to the Disheng Gate.
Tang Fan and Jin San will meet Qingge at the exit to the secret passage of the Northern Imperial Guard. Qingge and Tang Fan will ride in the carriage while Jin San drives it to the Dongzhi Gate.
Sui Zhou keeps his eyes fixed on Tang Fan while he speaks.
"You will leave the carriage at the farm, 3 li from the capital on the eastern road, then travel on foot to the stables."
Tang Fan nods, takes over. "We'll take the horses to the meeting point with Wu Yin and Deng Er in the forest on the northern road. You will leave the decoy carriage with Shui Ling at the outpost to the south of the capital and make your way on horseback to meet with us." He pauses. "Guangchuan, we will remember. Have you heard anything from the usual sources?"
Sui Zhou shakes his head, looking troubled. "If Wang Shi were here, there wouldn't be a secret in the capital we wouldn't know."
"If he were here, we wouldn't be doing all of this," Tang Fan says, shaking his sleeves out and standing up. "He had better thank us generously for putting us into such danger." Deng Er glances between them. "Tang Daga, you shouldn't talk like that." "Ah, Yao, Deng Er, Wang Shi can afford it." Tang Fan waves a hand, remembering the incredible roast lamb he'd eaten last time he'd visited Wang Shi in Liaodong. Sui Zhou rises to stand as well, gathering the empty plates and cups slowly before Deng Er takes over.
"I will do it, Sui Daga. I know you have to get to work."
She glances at them both. "I will see you tonight. Wu Yin and I will save some supper for you." They both watch her walk into the kitchen, and after long moments turn to face each other. Sui Zhou's expression is still tense, troubled. Despite the nervousness in his own gut, Tang Fan makes himself smile.
"I will see you soon, Guangchuan," he says.
Sui Zhou's gaze searches Tang Fan's face, his silence imbued with a meaning Tang Fan can't quite grasp. As the pause tips over into discomfort, Tang Fan gives a brief laugh and starts to turn away.
"Run Qing, wait,"
Sui Zhou says, voice rough. And he must have stepped forward after him, because when Tang Fan turns abruptly back around, Sui Zhou seems much, much closer than he was before. Close enough that when Tang Fan's hands come up in surprise, he finds them a hair's breadth from resting on Sui Zhou's chest. The fine silk embroidery strokes faintly against Tang Fan's fingertips as Sui Zhou takes a sudden breath in.
"Guangchuan,"
Tang Fan says, a little shakily. This close, he can smell the fragrant tea on Sui Zhou's breath, see the faint red mark where the band of his futo has pressed into the skin of his brow. He can see each strand of hair in Sui Zhou's eyebrows, and his chest tightens. Neither of them step away. Tang Fan's eyes widen as Sui Zhou lifts his hand. Then his eyelids are fluttering in confusion as Sui Zhou presses the gentlest touch to Tang Fan's cheek, just a brush of his fingers near the corner of Tang Fan's mouth. Tang Fan feels his lower lip drop open just the slightest amount as his breath catches. Then he swung forward a little into open space. Sui Zhou has stepped back a pace and is holding his finger up. Tang Fan frowns and refocuses on it. A sesame seed.
"Be careful, Run Qing," Sui Zhou rumbles,
his smile small but genuine.
And don't be late.
He turns and pushes through the door and out into the snowy courtyard. Tungfan is careful to behave just as he does on any other evening, walking home from the prefecture via the bao stall he likes best, and stopping in at Donggu's for a bowl of noodles, and to pay off his tab. Donggu gives him a suspicious look at the pouch of coins he places on the table, but rolls her eyes and relaxes when he complains about the amount of food in his bowl. The house feels strange, though to avoid any suspicion, the lanterns in the courtyard are lit as usual. If anything, they make the emptiness even more pronounced. Tongfan doesn't bother going to the kitchen or elsewhere. He goes straight to his rooms to change out of his uniform and into clothes both less conspicuous than his usual white and more suitable for riding. He spends long moments staring unfocused at the light shining through the lattice door while he tugs his hair free of its braid and runs a comb through it. When the joss stick he's lit is a finger's breadth from finishing, he puts the lantern in his room out and heads to the rear door of the house, normally only used to bring in firewood and other household supplies. Moments later, he hears the trotting clip of a horse's hooves and Jin-san's hushed voice chuffing commands. The carriage doesn't even slow down as it approaches. Jin-san just reaches down and hauls Tongfan up as they grip each other's forearms. Tongfan climbs back into the screened carriage, heart racing.
"Any changes?"
Jin-san mutters through the thin curtain. "No," Tongfan replies, perching close to the front of the carriage to watch out over Jin-san's shoulder. "All is proceeding according to plan." Jin-san doesn't reply, just urges the horses to pick up the pace as they travel through the streets towards the Northern Imperial Guard. Tongfan has never approached it from this side, but Jin-san had scoped it out over previous days, which is fortunate because there are no lanterns to light their way, just the cold, dim light of a half-moon casting the stone walls into deep shade. Jin-san slows the carriage as they round up to the entrance to the hidden passageway, and Tongfan is sure his heart must be pounding louder than the horse's hooves as his eyes strain into the darkness. A shadow detaches itself from the wall and moves with silent grace to land lightly on the board next to Jin-san. Tongfan almost falls back into the carriage. He catches himself and reaches out to grasp Chinga's cloak and haul her inside. She isn't even breathing hard, her eyes glittering at him as she pushes her hood back.
"Tongfan," she says, "you're here."
"Quiet," Jin-san hisses back at them. Chinga reaches for Tongfan's hand and squeezes it hard. Surprised at the gesture, Tongfan returns her grip briefly. "We just need to make it out of the capital, then we will rendezvous with the others," he whispers. She nods.
"Suizhou told me to be prepared."
She shows him the sword at her side, and Tongfan swallows. Surely anyone wanting Chinga for themselves would have followed Suizhou's decoy, and she won't need to use it. Chinga parts the curtain a fraction and keeps a watch out, crouched on the floor of the carriage as if ready to leap out at the slightest sign of danger. The carriage lurches through the rutted back streets, and the horse huffs and snorts. Tongfan's fingers grip hard on the wooden seat below him. He can't see anything beyond the barely defined silhouette of Chinga's hair coiled into a tight bun atop her head. He tries to gauge how far they are from the city walls, mapping in his head the route they had plotted and how long they had calculated it would take. But time feels meaningless. They've been traveling between one breath and the next for hours. The strange breathlessness ends abruptly, even as Tongfan gets a glimpse of the gate over Chinga's shoulder. There's the sound of rapidly approaching hoof beats on either flank. Jin-san spits out a curse, and the air cracks with the sound of his whip. The carriage lurches forward violently, throwing Tongfan back into his seat, and back in time, staring at the Bolong in
Alasi's hands, the look on Dwarla's face. No fear, just sadness. Then the shock of her shoving him into the void where the floor of the carriage had been moments before. And there's a loud thud as something hits the carriage wall. Chinga grips the front of his jacket and yanks him to the floor, even as another bolt splinters through the latticing to embed itself on the opposite wall. Tongfan's brain is rattling around in his skull. It takes a moment for him to realize that the floor is still in place, but the bolt is aflame and the fire is licking out into the wood paneling and spreading. He coughs, suddenly struggling to breathe. Smoke is filling the enclosed space even as he's being thrown around with the movement of the carriage. The horse has been spooked, and Jinsan can't control it. Jinsan must be dead, Tongfan thinks. There is so much smoke. Everything around Tongfan is in ruin. Tongfan. Chinga's voice pierces the haze faintly. Move. He struggles to get his feet under him, but Chinga's grip is strong. She hauls him by the back of his belt and throws him off the carriage. He doesn't move his limbs fast enough to catch himself, rolling in the icy slush and mud, chin scraping the hard ground. Winded, he pushes himself to roll over with arms that feel like lead and gapes as he tries to suck air into his lungs. Why can't he move? Why can't he focus? If he could just move fast enough, he could get to Dwarla in time. He's hauled to his feet and shoved behind someone, and he grips the back of their jacket to anchor himself and stay upright. Stay behind me, Jinsan barks, even as he's darting forward to slash with his knife, ducking out of the way of a sword cutting down at him in the same movement. Reality floods back and it's loud. The crash of swords and bodies meeting and falling, the smell of smoke and the distant scream of the horse as it drags the flaming carriage behind it. There's a wall at Tongfan's back and Jinsan at his front. Beyond him, Tongfan can see Chinga fighting off at least six men, all dressed in dark, anonymous street clothes and all clearly skilled at combat. As he watches, Chinga spins between them with deadly grace, knocking them down with her sword and with blows from her hands and feet. Only some of them rise to face her again. As the last one is put down at her hands, the three men Jinsan is holding off break and charge Chinga at once. She launches at them feet first, knocking the first back into the two behind and all three to the ground. She stares at Jinsan and Tongfan, panting and bloody. Come on, there will be more where they came from. She turns swiftly and starts running toward the gate, black cloak arcing behind her. Jinsan grabs Tongfan's wrist and runs after her, Tongfan barely keeping to his feet as he's dragged after. His ears are ringing and his head is pounding and various parts of his body feel numb, as though they are waiting for the adrenaline to stop flooding through him before letting the pain in. Faster, Chinga cries as she approaches the gate. Come on, Tongfan, you useless! Jinsan pants, wrenching Tongfan forward, and he runs faster than he ever has, faster than he thought he could. There is no sound then, but the pounding of their feet and the loud rasp of his own breath, and the sounds echo and amplify as they run through the arched shelter of the gate before they burst out. Tongfan cries out in pain and stumbles. A moment later, Jinsan is kicking away a shadowy figure that had been crouching in wait on the other side of the wall. The attacker is not alone. Even Chinga is shouting in frustration and rage as she spins and lashes out at the men encircling her. Tongfan clutches his shoulder and feels helpless. Helpless and terrified. Not in fear for his own life, but of Chinga and Jinsan being slaughtered in front of him while he can do nothing but watch. But it's not to be. By the time Chinga has dispatched the men, she's kneeling on the ground and panting in exhaustion. Jinsan is standing next to her with a pilfered sword in each hand, watching the prone bodies for signs of them stirring. Can you walk? Jinsan asks gruffly. And Chinga gives a determined nod. I'm unhurt, just it's been a long time. She struggles to her feet, and Tangfan rushes to help her.
There isn't much opportunity to train in a prison cell. Tangfan, you're bleeding.
Tangfan follows her gaze down to where they are grasping each other's forearms. His sleeve is stained dark from his shoulder down to his elbow, seeping lower as he watches. There is a great shrill pain coming from the back of his shoulder, just out of sight when he cranes his head to look. He feels both very cold and very hot, and as though he should take advantage of the heat to keep moving for as long as he can. His limbs are trembling with the urge to keep running. "We have to get to the others," he says, "before anyone else can follow." Jin San nods firmly and takes Chinga's other arm. They stumble with as much speed as they can muster until the scattered outbuildings of the city turn into bamboo thickets and farmland. They keep off the road as much as possible, Chinga rallying enough to help them move through the vegetation in such a way as to minimize the sounds they make, even though there are no signs of pursuit. Whatever was fueling Tang Fan is waning, though. When they reach a small, sheltered glade, he stumbles and falls, and finds he can't get up, his hands and knees planted in the cold, damp grass, wrists locked to keep his face from meeting the ground. Instead of trying to help, Jin San squats next to him, elbows resting on his knees as he breathes hard. After a moment, Chinga more gracefully lowers herself to the ground, then flat onto her back. She's shaking, though not as much as Tang Fan is.
"The horses," Tang Fan croaks. "Rest first," Chinga says simply, and Tang Fan finally lies down next to her.
The bamboo whispers around them, and the fingers of its leaves seem to be tickling the sky as Tang Fan stares up at the stars netted between them. His body aches, legs weak with exertion and bruises throbbing dully. But worst still is the searing pain in his shoulder. His hand is clutched to the wound, tacky with blood, and he doesn't want to let go.
"Let me see," Jin San instructs, looming over him, and Tang Fan reluctantly tilts over to his side.
The light is too dim to see much, but Jin San grimaces nonetheless.
"Nice that it wasn't me for a change," he grumbles, cutting a hard glance in Chinga's direction. "Chinga is so sorry, Jin San Ye,"
Chinga says, sounding genuinely remorseful. She sits up, peers over at Tang Fan's injury.
"It can't be too bad, Tang Fan. Otherwise you wouldn't have made it this far,"
she says, cold comfort, and unwinds a band of dark cloth from her waist before wrapping the wound tightly, anchoring the makeshift bandage around his torso.
"Does it hurt?" she asks as Tang Fan hisses.
"Yes," he says, too wrung out to be anything but honest. Not even enough in him to complain. "But it doesn't matter. We need to go."
"You can wait here," Jin San says gruffly. "We're not too far from Wu Yin's stables. I'll go."
Chinga tries to offer Jin San her sword, which he scoffs at.
"Just try not to let him die before I get back," he orders. "I doubt Sui Daren will give me the rest of my pay."
And he disappears into the night with surprising stealth. A little while after Jin San leaves, Chinga manages to prop Tang Fan upright. In the time they've been resting, all the hurts that had hidden in the heat of their flight have made themselves known. Just sitting on the ground now is enough to make his bruised knees, hip, and elbow creak and throb, and his chin stings painfully. Being thrown off a moving carriage with no warning is something he's going to feel for days. Worse still is the wound to his shoulder. He can't even tell if it's a stab wound or a slash. It had happened so fast, which lances pain through him in a way that makes it impossible to think straight. Chinga examines it periodically, but there's little she can do, and Tang Fan thinks longingly of Pei Huai's consulting rooms, brightly lit and warm and clean.
It's not as bad as it could be,
Chinga tells him, and Tongfan scowls at her weak smile, which only seems to strengthen it. A faint, high whistle catches their attention, and Tongfan hisses through his teeth as Chinga takes his arm and helps him to his feet. He doesn't limp so much as hobble out of the bamboo thicket to where Jinsan is waiting on the road, the lead ropes of three horses in his hands and a wary expression on his face. The horse's nostrils flare at the scent of blood, and Tongfan stares up with a sinking feeling as Jinsan hands him a set of reins. Even if he wasn't injured, hauling himself up into the saddle would be a challenge. Here, Jinsan says, exasperated, and Chinga steadies him while Jinsan holds his hands together for Tongfan to step into. A moment later, Tongfan is launched up to land heavily in the saddle. He braces his remaining good hand on the pommel to steady himself, chin to his chest as his head spins.
Should we tie him to the saddle? Jinsan is asking. He's stronger than he looks,
Chinga responds, but even so loops the reins on the pommel so Tongfan can't drop them. Tongfan is vaguely aware of them mounting their horses. Then Jinsan is riding closer and taking hold of Tongfan's lead rope again. He chuffs his mount forward, and Tongfan's horse follows begrudgingly, tossing its head before ambling onward at a swift walk.
Jinsan, yeah,
Tongfan mumbles, a sense of urgency warring with the persistent shooting pain from every step the horse takes.
We need to go north.
I know where we're going, Jinsan whispers back sharply. Chinga remains silent, walking her horse alongside Tongfan's, throwing him frequent, concerned glances. Tongfan just concentrates on holding on. It feels as if it shouldn't still be nighttime, as if days have passed since he was eating noodles at Donggu's, since he was sitting in the soft lantern light of home. His breath clouds the air in shaky puffs, and he wishes he hadn't decided his new white cloak was too conspicuous and packed it in Wu Yin's carriage. The cold air has made his face numb, and he can't even feel his fingers, rictus stiff on the pommel of the saddle. His clothes, dampened by rolling in the slush when he came off the carriage, had heated when he was running. Now they cool against his skin, seeming to absorb all the chill from the air.
Tongfan,
Chinga says sharply at some point, as they move along the long road with fields on either side, bleak with a dusting of snow, the sky huge above. Tongfan can't remember how they got there, doesn't remember leaving the cover of patchy bamboo thickets. Tongfan responds, in too much pain to turn his head to look at her.
How are you feeling?
Her voice vibrates with concern.
Hungry,
Tongfan replies sullenly. He hears Chinga suck in an anxious breath and let it out harshly.
Can we go any faster?
She calls softly ahead to Jinsan.
Not if you don't want to make it worse, Jinsan returns, prickly.
And so they continue. Tongfan hears Dong'ar first, her clear voice ringing through the cold air as she calls his name. His horse woofs and comes to a halt, and he hears the sound of Chinga and Jinsan dismounting on either side of him. The moon has almost set, but there's the impossibly warm light of a lantern bobbing towards them, swinging from side to side. Dong'ar approaches at a run.
What took you so long? Tong Dog?
Her voice goes from strident to wobbly with her last words, and a moment later, Sui Zhou is appearing out of the darkness beside her, his face pale and shocked.
Tongfan, he croaks and lurches forward. What happened?
Tongfan pouts.
They didn't follow the decoy. My plan failed.
Sui Zhou reaches up, and Tongfan takes a deep breath before willing himself to swing his leg around so he can finally get off the horse. He manages it through sheer willpower alone, groaning in pain as he practically falls into Suezhou's arms. Suezhou is warm, his breath fast and hot against the side of Tongfan's neck, and a violent shiver racks through Tongfan, jarring every aching point of his body. His shoulder is just a spreading, icy burn at this point, and he feels a shock run through Suezhou as he lifts his hand away from it and sees it bloodied. Suezhou curses.
"It's not as bad as it looks, Guangchuan,"
Tongfan mumbles, trying to get his feet under him again. Suezhou quickly moves to his uninjured side and tucks his shoulders under Tongfan's arm, taking most of his weight and walking them slowly towards the edge of the forest, looming in the middle distance. Dengar hurries to walk on his other side, and just ahead of them, holding the lantern aloft. Wu Yin stands quickly when they make it into the clearing, his eyes wide. Tongfan squints at the firelight, hissing in pain when Dengar takes his other arm carefully and helps Suezhou lower him to sit, an open bedroll between him and the ground.
"Get the medical chest,"
Suezhou instructs shortly. Wu Yin nods and heads for the carriage, even while Jin San and Qinga enter the clearing, leading the horses behind them. Qinga quickly makes for Tongfan's side, crouching next to him. In the firelight, her face is dirty and bloodied, drawn. The look Suezhou casts at her isn't kind.
It's all right, Guangchuan," Tongfan says, trying to make himself sit more upright as Suezhou starts carefully peeling away his bloodied clothes. "Jin San Ye and I fought them off. Qinga was safe in our hands."
Qinga huffs incredulously, and Tongfan frowns at her as Suezhou starts to lift the makeshift bandage.
"Qinga, Gunyang, you know I am modest. Turn away!"
Qinga gives him a pained look before standing again and walking away. Tongfan is pleased to see she approaches Dengar, who immediately makes her sit and moves to stir a pot hanging over the fire. Tongfan flinches as the sleeve of his robe is eased down, and Suezhou lifts Tongfan's hair to tuck it over his uninjured shoulder so he can see the wound.
"Turn around,"
Suezhou rumbles, his hand hot where it's flat on Tongfan's bare flank as he helps to move him so he can see better in the light of the fire. Wu Yin approaches, lowering Pei Huai's chest of supplies to the ground. Tongfan tries to fold his arms over his almost bare chest, and a moment later, Suezhou has removed his own cloak and is wrapping it around Tongfan, covering all but his wounded shoulder. Tongfan shivers into it, the tension in his body relaxing incrementally.
"I have my own cloak, you know."
Suezhou's reply is distracted as he starts to clean the wound.
"It's white. We have no way of cleaning bloodstains from it until we get to Heitao."
"That explains a lot about your color choices, Guangchuan."
From the corner of his eye, Tongfan sees Suezhou shake his head in disbelief.
"Did you save supper for us?"
"Of course,"
Suezhou says, pausing from his work to meet Tongfan's eyes.
"You can eat after I've stitched you up."
Tongfan grimaces.
"Where did you learn to stitch a wound? You can't even mend your own clothes."
"Yes, I can," Suezhou returns. "I just prefer it when you do it. And I learned how to treat minor flesh wounds in an Oirat prison camp."
Tongfan swallows dryly, grateful, at least, that Pei Huai never taught Suezhou how to cauterize. He keeps the thick fabric of Suezhou's cloak wrapped around his fists as Suezhou stitches his shoulder closed again, focusing on the rough weave binding his knuckles tightly as he stares out into the darkness, listening to Qinga and Dengar's soft murmurs, the clink of ceramic and the crackle of fire. Finally, Suezhou is finished, and Tongfan feels wrung out and tender, like he's just been dragged behind a horse all this way instead of on top of it. Suezhou helps him dress again with the utmost care, Dongar had fetched clean robes from the carriage, then turns him back to face the fire. He wraps Tang Fan's own cloak securely around him, and Tang Fan eyes the blood smears on Sui Zhou's cloak sourly. Sui Zhou pauses, and it makes Tang Fan glance up again. Sui Zhou is staring, eyes roaming Tang Fan's face. Tang Fan can't interpret his expression, but he feels a vague mix of relief and loss when Sui Zhou breaks eye contact to reach for the medical chest again. He watches as Sui Zhou dips his fingers into a pot of ointment. Then Tang Fan is hissing and flinching back from the sting as Sui Zhou smears it onto his grazed skin. Tang Fan lifts his uninjured arm half-heartedly to try and push him away.
I thought you were different from the other Imperial Guard, Sui Zhou,
Tang Fan complains.
Must you torture me?
Sui Zhou meets his eyes, expression incredulous, though he does put the lid back on the pot of ointment.
I'll get you some food, he says and stands,
closing the lid of the medical chest and taking it with him. Wu Yin comes to sit next to Tang Fan, handing him a bowl that is large enough to have food in it, but instead has wine, a sweet and spicy scent rising from it on a wisp of steam. Tang Fan wraps his hands around it immediately, relishing the heat bleeding through the ceramic. Tang Fan drinks greedily, and it soothes liquid heat down into his gullet. Moments later, he's feeling drowsy, body relaxing a little, his shoulder still throbbing, but less so now that the muscle isn't as tense. Dongar hands him another bowl, and Tang Fan nearly spills them both as she lunges in and wraps her arms around his chest.
I knew we all should have gone together,
she declares, voice wobbly, and drags the back of her hand over her face when she stands again. Tang Fan can't agree, grateful for her safety. The soup warms him further, and Wu Yin insists he finishes the wine as well, until both bowls are empty and tiredness is tipping the scale over pain. Sui Zhou returns from where he was quietly consulting with Jin San and Qingke on the opposite side of the fire. He's carrying a large fur, and he wraps it firmly around Tang Fan's shoulders before helping him straighten out his legs. Oh, it aches! And lie down, rolling him into the bedroll.
I'm not a child, Guang Chuan,
Tang Fan slurs petulantly. Sui Zhou doesn't answer, simply tucking the hood of the bedroll closely around Tang Fan's face. The fur tickles lightly at Tang Fan's lips and nose, but his arms are too well wrapped to do anything about it. He tries to scowl, but he can't seem to keep his eyes open in order to do so.
Sleep, Runqing.
Sui Zhou's voice comes softly, and Tang Fan falls asleep to the sound of his friends talking quietly and the warm crackling of the fire.